Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 62. We're covering the 2019 Honda Classic and the Oman Open. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have the European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Steve. Makes a bit of a change to do this on a Tuesday morning rather than rushing around on a Monday night, I must say. Feels a bit different, but let's give it a go, eh?
Oh, doesn't make a great deal of difference. We actually had some... The reason we're recording this on Tuesday morning is we actually had some odds that we could actually build a betting preview around. Well done to the bookmakers for actually getting some odds out there on Monday, which they've been struggling to do of late. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. I'm sure none of the odds compilers listen to this, Paul. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. Link is available in the description box. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf, Paul is at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. That has been doing some serious numbers recently,
yeah, really
the Golf Betting, the Golf Betting Show. I think we did last week was the fifth highest we'd ever done in terms of views, which for like the WGC in February is unheard of.
Yeah, so really good. Lots of good...
Give it a watch.
Yeah, and lots of nice subscriber numbers coming through on that as well. So,
absolutely.
Give it a like, give it a subscribe.
Over 250 so far this year, so it's all good. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and a myriad of different pod channels. Of course, it's also available on the Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Subscribe and follow the podcast. Now, please take time to... I say this every week. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes, and naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. And people might think, well, you say that every week, Steve, and you always read good ones. Fact of the matter is, they tend to all be good. And we've got two more here. And for listeners, leaving us a review and rating us, just it helps so much to get visibility within iTunes. So these reviews that you're leaving and the five-star reviews do work with iTunes in terms of giving them confidence to actually list us far higher in their categories. So thank you for everyone that leaves these reviews. It's really much appreciated. I've got two here. First one from Neil Burden 75 via he's in Great Britain. So thank you, Neil. Pod of the week, 5 stars. Have been listening for 2 years now, and this is the best content on golf betting, DFS, bar none. Thanks for all your efforts. Not many ways to make this better. Some suggestions for the off-season or quiet tournament weeks would be pod topics like staking plans, data discovery, building a system process, interviews with golf pro punters. Great work, Steve and Paul, and thanks again. That's from Neil Burden.
Very nice, Neil. Thank you.
Yeah, interesting about data. We could talk all day about
data.
Yeah,
and also some of the weeks clearly are a bit more sparse than others, aren't they? So, in those quiet weeks or weeks where we've only got one tournament, perhaps we will bring different topic in or bring someone in to have a chat with us as well.
Have a natter.
Yeah, some good ideas there, Neil. Thank you.
Number two, this is from Paul Strawther. And he's in the United States of America. I can be more precise, actually. He's in Texas because he's... Hello from Texas is the title. 5 stars, big golf podcast fan. And adding this to the rotation, I enjoy listening to a new podcast and how they approach the betting market. I look forward to your European tour coverage. So thank you. That's from Paul Strawther over in the Lone Star State.
Brilliant. Thanks, Paul.
Right, let's crack on. Now, I know that you've got a couple of announcements to make, so I'll hand over to you in terms of two new developments that the listeners can get involved with.
Yeah, of course. The first one, we've mentioned this on the Masters pod that we did a couple of weeks ago now, a week and a half or so ago, which is our annual majors competition, which Bet365 have kindly offered to sponsor again this year. So there are £250 in prizes, cash prizes up for grabs, to the first, second and third. So the first placed Player will win £150, second place £75, third £25, so total £250. And all you have to do is tell us who you think will win each of the four majors. So it's done as a one and done, so you can only pick each player one time, and you need to basically give us the name of four different players for each of the one for each of the majors. Send it to us either via email, on our Facebook group where there's a dedicated thread for the competition, or via Twitter. And we'll collate all of the entries, publish them just before or just after the Masters starts, and we'll sit back and see who gets the closest. Now, you don't have to get all four of them right. I mean, if you can pick all four of the major winners, then, well, you know, absolutely incredible performance.
Start a podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. Typically, the winner of this probably gets two of the four winners, and maybe, you know, a top 10 out of the third or the fourth one. The way the scoring works is based on the dollar earnings of each of the four players that you put down. So if your first player wins the Masters and wins the best part of $2 million, then that's your score. If he misses the cut on the second one, then clearly he scores nothing or very little. Sometimes they get a little bit of a residual earnings for missing the cut of the majors. So we tot up all of the dollar earnings from the four players that you pick, and then publish a league table after each of the four majors so you can see where you are. And of course, the winner at the end gets this £150, second £75, third £25. All great fun. We usually get around about 500 entries per year, so lots of competition, and yeah, free to enter. So we'll stick a link to the full details and terms and conditions in the Podbean description. So if you listen to this on Podbean, you'll be able to pick that link up, and then you've got all of the entry details via that page there on the site. But yeah, good fun. You and I haven't done particularly well in this because there have been some great entries over the years. I think one year someone did pick three out of the four winners, which is a remarkable
feat.
To be able to pick that before the Master starts, yeah. And to get three of the four up is really good going. So
thank you to Bet365 for sponsoring that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and we're not talking free bets here. We're talking cash prize. Yeah, so it's all good.
It's all cash prizes, and of course, if you're overseas, we'll just we'll get it into the currency equivalent when we pay out the prizes after the Open Championship this year, with the way that the scheduling all works in 2019.
Now, I know that we've been getting quite a lot of content or a lot of feedback around DraftKings and the fact that we focus on the podcast on betting rather than DK.
Yep.
And one of the things that we've always wanted to do, I know that you're a very keen DraftKings player.
Yeah.
I play on the odd occasion. But just the way that the podcast works in terms of recording time and the way that the market or the prices aren't actually out when we go to actually record, it doesn't work very well. But we're looking into that.
Yep.
But I know that you've made a serious development on the DraftKings time, because we via the Twitter activity that you do, and also via our Facebook group. So we've got 4,500 golf punters on our Facebook group. There's a link in the description box. You can come and join as well. You do DraftKings competitions with Golf Betting System, don't you? So
yeah.
Do you want to talk the listeners through that as well?
Yeah, in terms of DraftKings previews, Steve and I were talking last week, and I think what we'll try and do for the Masters is we'll put together a dedicated DraftKings podcast, which will probably follow the general betting one. So that will probably be out maybe Tuesday afternoon on the week of the Masters. Where we'll focus entirely on the salaries and the different price bandings, and see if we can dig out some decent teams, particularly with the Millionaire Maker, which will be running that week, which is always good fun and always something that captures the imagination. So we'll push that out on the week of the Masters. But yeah, as you say, we've been running some small-scale leagues. So we've got a GBS league that's been set up for a little while. We've got about 350 members of that now. And each of those are invited to play against other GBS listeners or Facebook group members or Twitter followers each and every week. And we set up contests that are either $3 or $10 to enter, and if you do particularly well, then you'll take away part of the prize or the top prize if you top that little mini league each week. So I think for the Masters last year, our biggest contest was 75 players. And I think, you know, if we can get a few more members into this league over the next few weeks, I'm sure we can put out some pretty chunky contests for everyone to enter, you know, kind of 100 plus entries and some decent prizes as well. And of course, you're sharing that. The prizes are all between all of us. So they're not public contests. You've got much more of a chance of winning because they're smaller. And also, you might recognise some of the names on there. Steve plays, I play. So you can come along and try and beat us each and every week for a bit of fun. And as I say, if you win the prize, you win the cash to go with it as well. So what we'll do, in the Podbean description here, there'll be some links through to our GBS, the league page, where you can enter this week's contests. And there's already four set up for this week. Again, there's a $3 and a $10 entry for the Oman Open, and there's a $3 and a $10 entry for the Honda Classic as well. So there's ready-made events for you to get stuck into. So if you're already a DraftKings member, then you can just join the group straight away. If not, then follow the link through, and you'll be able to register for entries then into our league and each and every week. All good fun, I find.
What's the new customer offer? Is there one?
If you deposit, I think it's $5 or £5 or €5, depends on your currency. So the minimum deposit's £5 or whatever, five whatever. And then you get a free $3 entry into a $3 contest. So our basic contest each week is $3. So you could sign up and make your minimum deposit, and you'd get entry into our contest for that particular week. Or you could go into one of the big public contests for $3 and have a play with that instead. How you play that $3 is totally up to you. But yeah, it's I've been playing for a couple of years now, and it's a staple part of my weekly staking plan, effectively. So a proportion of what I bet each week goes onto DraftKings, and I've had a bit of success in the past, and a lot of fun along the way.
Absolutely. So we've got the majors competition for 2019, and if you're a DraftKings player or you want to start playing DraftKings golf, we've also got some golf betting system leagues there for you, and there's a link through in the description box to the new customer offer. Right, I'll tell you where I was going to go quickly before we start talking Honda Classic and Oman Open.
Yep.
Now, our Masters Anti-Post podcast that we put out there a week before last, that's already our most popular podcast of the year so far. Mm. So, and we're getting, clearly, that's just adding up day after day, people listening to it. And we talk about the golf course, statistics to look for, kind of players, where the course works for them, trends, and if there was any potential value in the anti-post market. Now, for love nor money, I don't know why, but, well, I kind of know why. I backed Sergio Garcia on the exchange this morning. 75-1 I got him for, 74-1. So I'm on Garcia as of this morning. I thought he played quite well last week. You think he's got anger issues. But
I can see where you're coming from. I mean,
his form reminds me of 2 years ago, because he won in Dubai. He was third in Dubai this year. Got a top 10 in the WGC last week. He's hitting tons of greens, and the putter started to warm last week, which I found very interesting. And in anti-post market, we were just saying Jordan Spieth's been 11-1 up until this point. Some of the bookmakers have actually lengthened Jordan Spieth for the Masters. Can you believe it? I'm seeing 18-1 with Betfred for Jordan Spieth to win the Masters. Yeah. So they're actually lengthening some prices. They're nowhere near where they should be, but they're lengthening some prices, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit of reaction finally to how Jordan's been playing. A little bit of reaction,
There's also a reaction for Rory McIlroy. He's 9-1 in places now, with Dustin Johnson joined favourite.
Yeah.
Now, the key statistic we've discovered here, and I'm going to just keep a tracker on this, not every week, but moving forward, it's shared by the winners of the Masters going back 5-6 years, is par 4 birdie or better on the PGA Tour. So here's the top 10. And if you actually go to the PGA Tour website, it's slightly misleading because one player isn't mentioned on it because he hasn't done enough tournaments. But I'll take you through the top 10 as it stands. 10 is McIlroy. He jumped up from 56 after Mexico.
Yeah.
9 is Ryan Palmer, doubt if he's playing. 8, Jason Kokrak, doubt if he's playing. 7, he's eked up, Jason Day. So he hasn't been playing, but because they've been playing some tough courses of late, he's actually going up in the charts. So Jason Day is 7. Rafa Cabrera-Bello is 6. JT is 5. Rose is 4. Ricky Fowler and Sergio Garcia are tied 3rd. We've got Tyrrell Hatton at 2 and Phil Mickelson at 1.
Remind me what the stat was with this.
You've got to be the last 5 or 6 winners have all been in the top, I think it's like the top 7 or 8 of par 4 birdie or better leaders as they arrive at Magnolia Lane. That's driving down the lane.
Pretty,
so I'm just keeping my eye on that statistic.
Yeah, it's a pretty consistent stat, wasn't it, when you dug it out?
Very consistent. Mm. So those are the guys to be keeping an eye on, and that there's going to be ebbs and flows in that.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
You know, I'm seeing some very big players not in that top 10. Mm. The likes of Bryson DeChambeau, the likes of Brooks Koepka, Gary Woodland, Mark Leishman's not in there. So it's just worth keeping an eye on.
Well, it's not after last week's effort. Mark Leishman's not in there. I doubt he's going to be.
No. And DeChambeau was all he was all over the place. The scientist as well. He clearly hadn't got a handle for
the altitude,
for the golf course, or just wasn't up for it. Just out of interest, Tiger Woods is fresh into that statistic. He's sitting in 47th spot. So and Xander Schauffele's 48th. So if these guys, trend-wise, want a chance to win the Masters, they need to improve their par 4 performance. Mm. And it kind of works, doesn't it? On a golf course as tough as Augusta, you need to be playing the par 4s particularly well.
Yeah, you've got to play the par 4s
as you
well.
Arrive.
Yeah, you've got to play the par 4s as well, and you've got to take advantage of those reachable par 5s on the back nine, haven't you?
Yeah, you got it.
The big key to Augusta.
Another thing I wanted to highlight after last week in Mexico on those pretty much pure Poana greens. Since 2008, these are some of the big guys in terms of the tournaments they've won on Poana greens, right? McIlroy, 3 PGA Tour victories since 2008. Tiger Woods, 4. Phil Mickelson, 5. Bubba Watson, 6. Dustin Johnson, 10 now after last week.
Yeah. He's so comfortable.
He's just prolific on Poana or Poana bent grass greens. Absolutely prolific.
Yeah. It's absolutely critical for that. And we kind of touched on it in the pod last week. And we talked about the need to be able to handle the greens and to be able to perform well on and around the greens. And Dustin's touch all week was absolutely outstanding. And what did he make? 3 bogeys during the course of the week. His scrambling was outstanding. And when he gets those chances on the Poana, on the putting surfaces on the Poana, he converts a hell of a lot of them. And, you know, I was watching Xander. Clearly, I'd invested interest in Xander. And the amount of putts that he missed inside 5 feet, inside 3 feet even, was just soul-destroying. Yet, you know, someone like Dustin, who clearly has the measure of that putting service, just strolled round and made virtually everything. So big pointer for next year. Again, you know, you've got to be comfortable and confident on those putting surfaces. And if that means that the players that you're backing are particularly short and obvious, then perhaps that's the way to play it. Perhaps trying to dig out a bit of value isn't the way to do it on something that's going to be so kind of smack you in the face. This is the kind of player going to win it.
Was he 9-1 or 10-1?
I think it was tens, but yes, you know, world class field, and you know, his form's been indifferent, but shown some real sparks. Clearly, out in the Middle East when he won in Saudi, he played really well there, and you know, he's going to go back to the world number one, isn't he? After this week, regardless of what happens, because the way that the vagaries of the system work. So he's 2 at the moment, but will return back to world number one after Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well deserved, I think.
He's an absolute beast on the Poana.
Yep. Yeah, you know, and it all marries up, doesn't it? You know, he's clearly got a fantastic record at Pebble Beach as well. And as you said, just from those reading out those numbers, 10 wins on Poana Greens.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
I'd have thought he's licking his chops for Bethpage Black, the US Open this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be right up his street.
Yeah. And demands a bit of length as well, Bethpage, doesn't it? So.
Oh, God, that, yeah. I think he's finished second or third there in the past, surprisingly enough.
That combined with the greens, there's a lot to like already, isn't there?
Now, let's crack on. Enough waffling, I suppose. A Honda Classic. So we actually return to we're entering the Florida swing, and with this new rescheduled PGA Tour, we've now got four straight tournaments in Florida. So Honda Classic. We've then got the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which we'll see again, the return of Tiger Woods. You've got the feeling Tiger might be a little bit popular next week. Mm. And I would assume Rory McIlroy will be going off about 6-1. So that's going to be worth looking at next week with Woods. And there'll be a good field, as there always is there. Then after that, we have the move from May to March, which is the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. And then after that, we have the Valspar Championship, which they play at that very tight, quite long golf course at Copperhead. And as we've seen in the past, it's actually that event that can very often throw up the eventual winner of the Masters. You've only got to look 12 months ago to Patrick Reed, I think, who was runner-up.
Yeah.
At Copperhead and goes on and wins the Masters. So, you know, just in terms of Augusta, there's so many subplots right now. If you can get a handle of what's going on in these warm-up tournaments, it's very, very beneficial when we come to April.
Yeah, I think going back to the Arnold Palmer last year, I think that's where where Patrick Reed caught my eye in terms of his putting as well. I think
he was top 10, wasn't he?
Yeah, his putting was really good there. So yeah, you're right. Keeping a close eye on how people are trending through these events is key.
Absolutely. Now, the Honda Classic starts us off, and it's played on the Champions Course at PGA National. It's an original Tom Fazio design, but then Nicklaus came in and redesigned it in 1990 and 2013. So it's a Jack Nicklaus golf course. If you go to the Golf Betting System website and you go onto the PGA Tour predictor model, we have a variable on there, and it's all free of charge to use. We have a variable on there where you can see the best performers in the field on Jack Nicklaus designs over the last 5 years. So that's an interesting or just an eye-opening statistic to look at. I'll actually take you, and this is one thing we don't probably do enough of, and I think mainly is because sometimes on a Monday we actually haven't done the predictor model in terms of our own predictions. We always pull together a predictor model for the European Tour and the PGA Tour every week that we pull together ourselves. And I've pulled together a predictor model for this week's event. I'll just take you through the top 10 quickly. We have a scenario of Jim Furyk at 10. I actually think Jim Furyk ain't a bad shout here. He's triple digits.
Mm.
Luke List at 9. He was runner-up last year in the playoff to Justin Thomas. 8 is Brooks Koepka. 7, Webb Simpson. 6, Adam Scott. 5, Billy Horschel. 4, Ricky Fowler, who won it 2 years ago. 3, Gary Woodland. 2, Sergio Garcia. 1, Justin Thomas. So that's the top 10 of this week's predictor model. You can come and use it at Golf Betting System completely free of charge. And, you know, that, you know, statistically, that ties up very, very closely to the betting market. Justin Thomas is a 5-1 shot. He's 9-2 in a place. The 11-2 that was first chalked up for him yesterday, that's all been snapped up. Fowler, the biggest price you'll get on Fowler is 12s. Brooks Koepka is drifting at 14s. Sergio and Adam Scott are 16-1 shots. Gary Woodland is 20s. Simpson and Cameron Smith are 25s. We then have Daniel Berger, Emiliano Grillo and Billy Horschel at 40-1, and it's 40 to bar those. So that's the top of the betting market this week. Now, PGA National. It's a brute. It's a par 70, only two par fives per round. It's usually very windswept here, and pretty much every hole features water, plenty of water. So plenty of water for wayward drives, plenty of water for short approach shots on par fours. Both the par fives feature water pretty much down the whole length of the hole. It's a double bogey festival, really.
It's just a tough track, isn't it?
It's a tough, isn't it? Especially when you throw in the wind. Mm. It's got big, thick rough, and it's famous for the bear trap, that stretch 15 through 17. They've actually shortened the 17th par 3 by 15 yards. They've been a bit generous this year. So they've taken 15 yards of it. That played over half a shot above par last year, the 17th par 3.
It's a tough par.
So if you were getting a par there, you were basically making a birdie against the field.
Yeah, it's a tough old hole.
I think it's going to be slightly different this year. I think it's going to be more 2016-ish. Now, this is I sitting in an office in the southeast of the United Kingdom. But by the looks of weather forecasts, it's the 70 to 75% chance that it's going to rain tonight, Tuesday night, and there's an 80% chance that it's going to rain Wednesday night. So I think that they might arrive on Thursday morning to quite a soft golf course. Mm. Last year was firm as fast as you like. So a complete role reversal in course conditions, I think. But more tellingly, this was blasting 25, 30 miles an hour for 4 days last year. From what we're seeing, it's going to be a lot more tranquil this year. Nothing stronger than 10 miles an hour for the first 54 holes. So I think we're going to see an orderly tournament. None of these breaks in play. I also think we're going to see scoring slightly lower than we saw last year, where 8-under won this in terms of Justin Thomas.
And then Sunday's a little bit trickier, did you say?
Yeah, a little bit trickier. Maybe 15 to 20. Nothing crazy. Mm. But that's very much what happened in 2017, where the first two rounds were played on a very, very calm golf course, but a soft golf course. Now, don't sit there and think this is going to be a 20-under birdie fest, because this golf course is far too hard for that. But I'm just looking at my numbers. I'm looking at my spreadsheet. Just to put it in context, after 36 holes back in 2017, soft and no wind, Wes Bryan and Ryan Palmer were leading at 9-under par. Mm. Fowler was at 8-under. So I think you're going to be around that kind of mark again. So I think if you're 12, 13 under come the end of play Sunday, you're going to be very, very close to winning this.
Yeah.
Some other names up there, Lahiri, we had CT Pan, Morgan Hoffman, Tyrrell Hatton, Martin Kaymer, Scott Stallings. They were the top 10 after 36 calm and soft holes 2 years ago. Just throw that in there. I don't know if it means a great deal compared to where they're
playing
and
then,
at the moment.
Then Fowler went through and won, didn't he, over the weekend?
Yeah, he shot a great round on the Saturday, and I think he was 3 or 4 clear. I could just look at my preview and tell you that, because we actually track on there where he was. He was 2 back, 1 back at halfway, and then 4 ahead going into Sunday. Mm. Then it got quite windy on the Sunday. And I think that was the one where Charlie Hoffman came through. Hoffman was in the mix. There was a couple. And Gary Woodland finished second. Last year, Thomas was 1 back, 2 back, and then 1 back going into Sunday. There's a mix here. But you do, I think, to win here, I think you need to be kind of pretty much on the pace throughout. So you could do with a fast start.
You're just not catching you're not catching holes up, are you? You're not going on a birdie barrage to
grind,
side
isn't
way,
it?
Yeah, you're not going to side your way through the field with a
you're
stretching.
Not going to shoot a 62. No.
It's not that.
So to make up 7 or 8 shot deficit after round one is nigh on impossible. Terms of statistics I was looking for, I want players that are hitting the ball very close from 200 yards or out. Mm-hmm. I think that's where this tournament can be won and lost. I also like players who are very good out of the sand, because this golf course, I think it's one of the, well, it's certainly in the top five toughest for sand saves, and there's a lot of sand around here, deep bunkers. And the other thing I always look for here is players that from fairway can hit the ball nice and close on their approaches. Because if you're looking at it statistically, it's not a bird. It's not a putting contest. I mean, strokes gained putting for the last three winners averaged out is 18th.
Yep.
Strokes gained off the tee 9th. Stroke gained approach 6th. Strokes gained tee to green 5th. So again, tee to green, some very strong approach play. Thank you very much. And if you're putting around about 1.7, you're not going to be a million miles away. It's not a putting contest. It's not a 1.58 putts per GIR putting contest. That's clear. And if you just look at the old style statistics, it's greens in regulation, which is one of the strongest at 15th. It averages out over the last 9 winners. And scrambling is actually the most important here, 11th. Far more important than putting average. Mm. So if you're missing greens, and you're going to, ups and down are very important. A little similar to last week at Chapultepec.
It all makes sense, doesn't it? You know, you've got to keep those bogeys off your card. You know, as you said, you're not going to make a load of birdies to catch up. So a steady bogey minimising game would suggest, you know, it's very major like, isn't it, in terms of the way it's set up, in terms of the difficulty levels, in terms of your mental approach, I think.
Listen to these winners though. Kamio Fijaigas in 2010, Rory McIlroy in 2012, Michael Thompson 13, Russell Henley 14, Harrington 15, Scott Fowler Thomas last 3. Now, you look at all of those. I didn't include Rory Sabatini. He doesn't fit. But we were actually on him that week at 17-1 in that dim and distant past in 2011. They'd all played well at US Opens prior to winning this.
Yeah.
And that is exactly where I'm at with this. I want someone that has shown the capacity to grind in a US Open. Now, if you take that to Russell Henley, he'd actually finished 16th in a US Open as an amateur.
Yeah.
Which is a, you know, phenomenal performance. We've got a situation with McIlroy. He'd won the US Open the year before. And Michael Thompson, he'd finished 2nd at the US Open behind Webb Simpson the year before. So there's a few trends in there. Justin Thomas last year, he was 9th in the US Open the year before as well. So it doesn't have to be the year before. But if you're seeing players that have been in the top 10 of US Open leaderboards, I don't think you're a million miles away this week.
It's that mentality thing, isn't it?
Of course it is. Now, I'm seeing here, I think it's interesting if we actually talk in terms of some players that were cleared to or close to being selected. So at triple digits for me, there was a player that I came close to selecting, and I know that you've had your eye on this guy for a while. It's Sung Kang. He's striking the ball very nicely, isn't he, Sung?
And
he's available right now, 125-1, 8 places each way with Paddy Power.
Yeah.
And if you look at Kang, the only time he's ever got kind of even into semi-contention in a major was the US Open. He finished, I think, in the top 20 a couple of years ago. So Kang, he's a typical South Korean. Miscut, second. Yeah, he's completely unpredictable. But Kang, I think, at 125-1, was going to be my next tip.
Yeah.
That's the one that came close to me. Another one, Chris Stroud, who's been playing quite nicely at the moment. He's 150-1 with Unibet right now. You got any players at a big price you like the look of? You're not going to say Brian Gay, are you?
It's funny you mentioned Jim Furyk, because he's the only player that I've backed so far.
He's close, I think.
Yeah, I backed him 100-1 with 8 places, which I thought, with 8 places each way, is well worth well worth taking on. And you know, if you think through Jim, you know, I know he's getting on a little bit now. He's 48. You know, he's within touching distance of the seniors should he want to go down that route. But I still think he's got enough game to compete and contend on the right kind of tracks that demand the right kind of player. And I think this is that kind of track for him. You talk about US Opens, clearly he won in 2003 at Olympia Fields, didn't he? He's got, I think he's got three more second place finishes and another two or three top fives as well, wasn't he?
He was runner up in his home state of Pennsylvania in 2016 at Oakmont. Yeah. So this is the point, isn't it? And without these Ryder Cup responsibilities, he can now focus on his golf.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the distractions are gone. You know, that season that you're going to get with the Ryder Cup as the captain, it's always going to be full of distractions, and that's disappeared now. But you look at his underlying form, fourth at the Wyndham, sixth at the Mayakoba at the back end of last year, 14th at Pebble, even 37th at Genesis on Riviera on his last start, which I think is too long. It's not really a Jim Furyk track for him. He's inside the top 10 after the first day, and yeah, he didn't disgrace himself at all. You know, finished middle of the pack on that track and still striking the ball very, very well. His accuracy has been fantastic. I know he tops your rolling tracker for driving accuracy.
He's third for greens in reg as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this is it. It's perfect, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And it's got a decent record in this event. I know it's played at some different tracks before it moved to PGA National in the middle of, was it 2007? I think it was. It moved here, didn't it? He's got some middling form here over the years, but I suspect without any distractions and, you know, Jim can kind of be free rolling in these events now. He's got nothing to prove, has he? He's just go out and play his golf. And I thought 100-1 was worth taking on. The other one that I haven't backed yet, but I've been toying with just out of principle is Patrick Harrington at 250s again with eight places. And we know with Harrington, he's won this event twice. He's won on PGA National once, and he arrived to that year without any form. He hasn't played actually since the back end of last year, so there's nothing tangible to grab onto. Clearly, he's got the Ryder Cup responsibilities himself now, but that's kind of a long way away from where he is now. And given the way that he thinks about the game, and he'll know the history of a lot of Ryder Cup captains and the fact that their game goes, you know, seriously south during that period of their tenancy, I guess. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to circumvent that. I know, you know, I've both listened to some interviews with him over the last few months where he was talking about the work that he's still doing on his game, his desire that he's still got for his game.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's worse.
And he always says that he thinks it would be easier for him to win a major than it would a PGA Tour event because majors suit his game.
Yeah.
So actually, this tournament is the the best probably on the whole PGA Tour schedule for him to actually be competitive on.
Yeah, for a regular PGA Tour event. So, 250s. I may well just put a couple of quid on that just to satisfy my curiosity, I think. But
I like Furyk.
Yeah,
I like both of them. The thing with Furyk is he's playing some very neat and tidy golf, and you know that US Open link is just ridiculously strong.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can get decent each way price on him with extended places. I mean, he's 100-1 with Paddy Power right now for eight places.
Yeah.
Seems like a bit of a no-brainer to me.
I think you get a run for your money with that. I think you will.
Yeah.
But yeah.
GMAC will probably be popular for the same reason. And GMAC is actually top of my GIR tracker, but I don't know. There's just something very, very wrong with the putting from what I see with him.
Yeah.
And you'd have thought he'd have been better in the Puerto Rico Open last week. He never really got into any kind of mix there.
No, his name was, you know, kind of second, third page at times, wasn't he? But nothing really outstanding.
I'll tell you where I'm at with my selections. I'm very much along this US Open link. Ideally as well, when you look here at Daniel Berger in 14, he finished runner-up to Harrington. You look at Scott 15, that was. Scott 16, Fowler 17, and Thomas 18. They all hit a ton of greens in their previous outing.
Mm.
That's consistent. So when I say a ton, I'm talking they were top 10 of greens in regulation the week before.
Yeah.
Two that jumped out to me at middling prices on that basis is Russell Knox, who who was fifth for GIR last week in Mexico. So I took the 66-1 with him. I took that seven places each way with Betfred. Bearing in mind this was, what, 6 o'clock last night? We're now talking 10 to 10 UK time in the morning over here on Tuesday morning. So that 66 has long gone with Knox. I'm seeing at best of 60s with Bet365, or he's 50s across the board, really. But Knox, second and third here. A WGC winner in the past. He's a two-time PGA Tour winner. He lives in Florida, so he's used to the Bermuda grass. And this clearly isn't a putting contest.
No.
So I like him on soft golf courses as well. And actually, if you think of Russell Knox, I was thinking about this morning over a Danish. He's played well on a number of courses that Rory McIlroy's played on. And I can remember, you know, when Rory ran the Irish Open a few years ago?
Yeah.
It was, he basically stole it at the end from Russell Knox, didn't he?
Yeah.
And there is a, for players that can play in two totally different ways, Knox has a link with McIlroy in just some of the courses where he pops up on. I mean, he's had a top 10 around Torrey Pines of all places, Russell Knox. Yeah. He bangs it 280 off the
tee. Yeah, he's not long, is he?
So I couldn't resist Knox, who I think is playing some very nice stuff at the moment. I think he was in the top 10 at Pebble Beach a few weeks ago, and a lot of people were on him, both for DraftKings purposes and also for betting. But you think about Pebble Beach and you think about the fact that it almost, well, it does every year, it turns into a putting contest. That is not Knox's bag.
Yeah.
But here, high GIR, high accuracy, I think Knox is a decent shout this week. Just to run you through his numbers. Sixth for proximity to hole from the fairway. He's 11th for sand saves. Brilliant. He's also 38th for proximity from 200 yards and out. Those are green lights for me, so I'm definitely on Russell Knox. Another one I thought was a strange price, but a nice price, was Kiradek Afibanrat, who I had to snap up at 66-1 last night.
Yeah, played well last week.
Again. Well, he played brilliantly last week. This is what I can't quite get my head round. Yes, he was here last year. He came 68th, get that. But actually, that's an advantage, because most tracks he plays in the United States, he's never been to in his life.
Yep.
And the thing with Afibanrat last year was, he just won in Perth, and I think he was coming off something, you know, like 5 or 6 tournaments straight, flying around the world, doing what he does.
Yep.
This year, think about it, he's been relatively quiet, he's played a lot more US golf, and he's coming straight from Mexico, where he finished in the top 5. And the number that really got me for last week was he was 2nd for greens in regulation.
Yeah, when he plays well, that is his. Well, he's a great putter as well. But when you see him hitting those high, kind of 80% greens in regulation stats, then there's a win.
How would you, as a European Tour guy who follows every single tournament on the European Tour, how would you describe the way that Afibanrat plays? Because you've seen far more of him than I have.
Yeah, he's an old school golfer. He shapes the ball. He's an outstanding putter. Not particularly accurate, but he can and does hit a lot of greens. He'd be suited to a Lynx-y style track. I wouldn't be surprised to see him perform really well at an Open Championship, kind of under the radar at some point in the future.
Hasn't he won that match play thing by the coast?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, the Paul Laurie match play, which was up on the. On the Scottish coast, yeah, and that was a Lynx-y track as well. But yeah, he's a very kind of classical golfer. He does shape the ball. He moves it both ways. When he's playing well, it is a lot of greens in regulation. He is an outstanding putter from 20 feet and in when he's playing well. So I can't fault that at all, really, because you know when his game is on, he can compete and contend pretty much anywhere, I think.
Listen to this. This follows on perfectly from what you just said. Sixth at Bay Hill in 2015. Sixth at Bay Hill in 2016. Bearing in mind he was a non-member, in relatively low status on the European Tour back then. He then went to Augusta, qualified for that. 15th at Augusta in 2016. That was the year Willett won at 5 under.
Yep.
So that was a nasty golf course for that renewal. 15th he was there. And then last year, 13th at Muirfield Village in the Memorial, which was a loaded tournament. And then 15th last year at the US Open. So his two best major championship finishes were at Augusta National when it played as tough as you like. And then he finished 15th last year at Shinnecock Hills, which again was a brutal tournament last year. He was actually 7th going into Sunday. Mm-hmm. And his two wins on the European Tour, 13 and 12 under respectively. And I don't think that target is going to be a million miles away from where we are.
No, it sounds about right, doesn't it, for this week, given the conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just, this genuinely, as a guy that clearly follows golf week in, week out, this genuinely surprised me about Kiradek. How he has settled down into a high-quality golfer of late is pretty mad in my mind. Right, listen to this. This is going from the 2018 Mexico Championship. 5th in that. These are all WGC levels. Yep. So WGC, Mexico, 5th. He then finished 5th in the World Match Play, so he made the quarterfinals, only beaten by Bubba Watson, who went on to win it. He then went to the marquee tournament on the European Tour, the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, which again, I think, played very tough, 5th. HSBC Champions at the end of last year, that was the one that Schauffele won. He was 4th, Afi Barnrat, and of course, 3rd in Mexico. You just think, well, how can... He also top 10 at the DP World Tour Championship to end the European Tour. How can he be 66-1? I'll take it.
It's worth taking.
He's far better than a 66-1 chance. You know, he's level there with Scott Piercy and Jason Kokrak.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think so. So I had to take that. So that works out quite nicely, I think. And then the other two at shorter prices, but not too short, really, in terms of Daniel Berger. 40-1. We know that he loves the golf course. It's hard to ignore someone that shot 6-under in their last tournament in the final round.
Yeah, flying finish from Puerto Rico.
Flying finish for Berger. He was clearly in the playoff as a rookie with Paddy Harrington back in 2015. Two wins on the PGA Tour, both at TPC Southwind, which is a absolutely rock-hard Bermuda-grassed par 70 setup. Fairly similar to this in terms of its difficulty. So Berger was very, very hard to ignore for me. I see some people whinging about his price, but I thought 40-1 was a decent enough price. I expected a little bit shorter for Daniel Berger. Berger was 7th in the US Open last year. And, of course, he went off in the final group with one Tony Finau. And the other one I've taken at the very top end, at the elite end, Justin Thomas could walk it, of course. It's exactly what you said in your Oman Open preview about Joost Luiten. He could win it. Mm. Justin Thomas is the clear favourite in this. All the stats are perfect. We were on him last year at 12-1. 5-1's too short for me. I struggle backing players at 5-1 in a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Especially a full field one. Ricky Fowler at 11-12. I don't know what Ricky's motivation is. He's already won this season. Brooks Koepka just seems to be missing something. Clearly the two-time US Open champion. He's perfect, really, in terms of his mould. His stats from last year would have been perfect for this, but this year he just seems to be struggling. Or maybe he's just pacing himself for the majors. I mean, he's very good at that, isn't he, Mr. Koepka? Mm-hmm. So I had the decision then, did I go for a Garcia, a Scott, a Woodland, or a Webb Simpson? Very tempted as well in Cameron Smith, who we know has finished 4th at Chambers Bay in the US Open. The trouble with Smith is I just don't think he's got the accuracy with his approach shots to hit enough greens to win this week, but Smith's a decent shout. Simpson was close for me, but I'm not seeing the proximity, which is strange for Webb Simpson. You think of him as a real long iron and scrambler sort that's really excellent in terms of its proximity to hole numbers. That isn't happening so far this season, so that put me off Webb. I don't think Gary Woodland's got the short game in terms of the sand saves and whatever to win this, but you can see Woodland being up there as well.
Yeah, I know Barry's on Woodland. He messaged me this morning to say that was his one pick this week. Although Barry does like a bit of Gary, so...
He does like Gary, but Gary also likes a soft golf course, so I can see, and he's finished second here in the past. Yeah. So, yeah, I can see that. Adam Scott let me badly down, didn't he? He let us all down, didn't he, badly at the Genesis, 16-1. So in the end, I took Garcia, who I thought played nicely last week in Mexico, a top 10. He fell apart on the Sunday. I think he only hit 10 greens out of 18. But up until that point, he was in the top 10 for greens in reg. His strokes gain numbers were superb. I genuinely think with Sergio, if he goes in a tournament where Tiger Woods is anywhere in the vicinity, he falls apart. Mm. And I looked at the tee times both round 3 and round 4 in Mexico last week, and Garcia Woods was two groups ahead. And I just think it fries Sergio's mind. He just cannot cope with Tiger Woods anywhere in his vicinity.
But it's also the circus that associates, you know, people traipsing up and down the fairway. And
when he was playing well in round 1 and round 2, he was on the totally different side of the golf course. Yeah. But Tiger isn't here this week, and Sergio is an absolute sunshine state expert, Sergio. He flies on Bermuda grass golf courses in Florida. Yeah. So I thought 16-1 is quite fair him. And his US Open record is clearly second to none. And he's playing sneaky golf, isn't he, Sergio? Very, very consistent. Number of top tens he had on the European Tour early this season, end of last season was amazing.
Yeah.
If anyone's there with a bit of desire over and above, around the kind of Thomas desire levels in terms of needing a win, I would put Garcia up there with the likes of Scott. And his numbers work out a lot better for me in terms of what I'm looking for. So, yeah, Sergio Garcia was my top selection this week, 2 points at 16-1. He can play well on a soft golf course. The thing that really grasped me about last week's numbers was he putted very well. And Sergio putting well is a real danger.
Yeah, if he can control his emotion, clearly he's got something to prove, and he needs to the whole kind of.
Did you see any outbursts from him last week?
No. I think he's calmed. I think he's got to calm down from that bunker wrecking display in Saudi. But equally, I guess then he's got something to prove as well, hasn't he? And something to deflect from that as being the most recent piece of Sergio Garcia news. A win would deflect from that nicely. But we shall see.
Right. The Oman Open.
Yes.
After last year, the first event here, you've actually got something to get your teeth stuck into, haven't you?
Yeah, a little bit. They've played some events here on the Challenge Tour in the past, although that doesn't have a great bearing for this field in terms of those who've played it. We're back in the Middle East for another 2 week stretch. So we had some Middle East action, then a bit of Australia action before the WGC. Now back to the Middle East. We've got this and the Qatar Masters next week. So this one takes us to the capital of Oman, which is Muscat, which sits it's about 250 miles south of Dubai, if you look at it on a map, to put it into context. Lowish quality field, not great, but not the worst. There are a few names at the top of the betting. Yeah, I think so. Joost Luiten is a worthy favourite, I think. He clearly shot through the field last week to finish in the top 10 at the Mexico.
Sorry, when I'm seeing Joost Luiten at 9-1, I'm switching the laptop off.
he did open at 12s, yeah. He's been nibbled into 11s. I expect he'll go 10-1, given the way that he's trending in terms of his price. But, he's the defending champion. He won last year, third in Abu Dhabi, sixth in Saudi, 10th in Mexico. And he finished with a 64 as well, which was a good strong round in that company. Clearly, he was nowhere near actually contending, so the pressure was off. But even so, that's not an easy track to shoot a 64 in. And if you look at how he's performed when he's defended in the past, he has got a couple of top five finishes. He finished third when defending the Lyonnais in 2014, fifth when defending the KLM in 2014 as well. So he's clearly, it doesn't impact him that much. But as you just said, price-wise, can you take him at a 9, 10? If you can get a little bit of 11 to 1, not for me, I don't think. Thomas Peters is just behind him in the betting. And he's been quite consistent. 8 top 30 finishes on the trot. Wedged in between that, you've got his World Cup of Golf win. But in terms of regular stroke play events, then 8 top 30 finishes. But he's just been that bit inconsistent.
Don't you think Peters is trapped, isn't he? He can't play PGA Tour because he's outside the world top 50. Mm. He thinks he's too good for the European Tour, and I think he's mentally trapped.
Well, he's another one.
He's cutting this frustrated figure, just lashing out at everything.
He's another one who's clearly got a bit of anger issues, isn't he? And there have been some really good signs with him. You know, he led Saudi after day one. He led the Super 6 after the second day. You know, both of those events, you say, well, you know, he's the quality player in this field. He should go and win this.
Too right.
But he, in those eight top 30 finishes, he hasn't finished in the top 10. Not once. Every time.
No.
Regardless of how he's performed during the events and the decent low rounds that he's put in, he's finished outside the top 10 every single time. So if you're backing Thomas Peters, you'd be ripping your hair out. And again, at kind of 12-1 price point.
He's as short as nines.
Yeah. Again, wow. I can't go close to that.
William Hill packing out the value there, mate, at 9-1 on Thomas Peters.
Taking no chances, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've got the likes of Ross Fisher, Alex Levy, low 20s, Jordan Smith, who's been really popular early part of this market this week, Thomas Detry, Justin Harden, who's been playing some really good golf, 33s or thereabouts. So there's a few decent names, nothing really outstanding in terms of the field this week. Last year, as you said, was the first year that we used the track for the Oman Open, but it used to be used on the Challenge Tour from 2013. So you've got the NBO Golf Classic in 2013 and 14, and then they used it for the Grand Final in 2015, 16 and 17. So there's a little bit of course form there. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, a few of the lower ranked players in this field have played in some of those events. So there is a little bit of course form to grab it onto. The track itself, Al Mooj Golf Club, is a Greg Norman design. It's coastal. Clearly, with its geography, it is based in the desert, but they've designed it as a pseudo-Lynx type of track. So you'd almost describe it as a desert Lynx, I guess, would be the closest description. It certainly does contain some Lynx-y features, but then it also contains some desert-type features as well. And clearly, the geography and the climate out there is desert-like, so a bit of a mix, really. 7,365-yard par 72, and it's laid to Paspalum Seedorf throughout, so fairways, rough, and greens are all on Paspalum. And we saw Paspalum in Saudi just before the WGC. That was the last time we saw a course that was fully laid to Paspalum grass. Slightly different strain, but similar nonetheless. So it's built on the beach, wide exposed fairways, bunkers, waste areas, as you'd expect. Similar, you know, the kind of regular Lynx style track that you might expect, the coastal type track that's wide and exposed. Four par fives ranging between 543 and 598 yards, so reasonably lengthy. And actually, there's a short par four, the second hole that plays the third easiest hole on the course. So that one of the par fours plays easier than a couple of the par fives. And the closing stretch is where it gets particularly difficult here. So even players who can hold on over the final four holes tend to be the ones who compile the best score, or if they can keep hold of the score that they've achieved up to that point in the day. I guess with these kind of tracks, and as always with a coastal layout, it's the strength of the wind which dictates the difficulty. And if you look at the winning scores from the old events that are played here, 2013, Rupi Kako won at 14 under. For 2014, Max Orrin at 7 under, so there's already a 7-shot swing there. 2015, Ricardo Gouveia, 13 under. Bernd Riethammer won at 21 under in 2016. So, you know, it's a massive swing there between minus 7.
He sounds like one of those wheat beers I like. Sorry, I just thought I'd throw that in there.
2017, Clemence Sordé.
I could have bought one of those in Amsterdam the other week.
What, a retailer? 21 of them, maybe.
Yeah.
Sordé won at 15 under, and then Loughton won by a couple of shots at 16 under last year. So in regular conditions, I think you're looking at around about the mid-teens. In really soft and windless conditions, you're going to get to 20 under. In windy conditions, you're going to get to 7 under or thereabouts. So there's a real mix. And if you look at this week, actually, it's going to be reasonably challenging. It's going to be nice for Thursday and Friday, low 80s Fahrenheit, 10 mile an hour winds or thereabouts. And then there's a front coming in on Saturday. The temperature's going to drop by 10 degrees, and you're likely to see 20 to 25 mile an hour winds sustained during Saturday. And I think that's actually going to make this course play particularly tricky on Saturday. Sunday, down to around about 15 miles an hour. So it won't be quite as tricky, but it will be a challenge. So I think you're going to find the scores are made over the first 2 days, and then it's going to hang on to your hats for the remainder of the tournament. Again, you've only got last year really to go on in terms of statistics, but if you look at how the players got round the course, the fairways are wide, and a lot of players, even the most wayward, are still hitting 50, 60% of fairways. So it turns it into a second shot course. And actually, greens and regulation stats were really consistent across the field. A lot of players kind of between 70 and 80%. There wasn't a massive amount of variation. So then it all came down to who performed best on and around the greens. And Loughton won with a field leading 1.64. 1.64 putts per greens and regulation. We've talked about Loughton. You know, I've backed Loughton more times than I care to remember.
If he can putt around 1.7, you're absolutely amazed. But 1.64, that's a miracle.
Well, you look at that and say, Joost Loughton's just putted at 1.64. He's won the tournament. Of course he's won the tournament, because as long as his long game is up to the same kind of standard that you'd expect, then he's going to win a golf tournament when he putts at that kind of level. Chris Wood was just behind him at 1.67. They finished first and second on the leaderboard. They finished first and second for putting on the week. So that kind of puts it into context. I think you need to be as good or marginally better than everyone else from tee to green, and you've got to make your putts and minimise birdies. Yeah.
Doesn't shout Stephen Gallagher or Bernd Wiesberger to me. You need someone that can putt.
Yeah, I think, greens and regulation is fine, and I think, the more chances you give yourself at birdie, the better, but you've got to be able to make the birdies on the week. Loughton was the only player to break 20 birdies, and that's pretty unusual, really. You often look at any regular event, and there are a number of players who get 20, 22, 24 birdies, apart from the very tiny. They'll struggle at the Honda, I'm sure, but, a regular European Tour event, that's fairly fairly unusual. So it's not a birdie fest by any stretch, and I certainly think with the wind the way it is over the weekend, it will be... I wouldn't be surprised if a kind of a 12, 14 under gets the job done this week.
Good honest test, then.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
If you look at all the six winners who have won here, each of them had a top 20 finish in one of their last two starts, so there was a semblance of form there. And I thought it was interesting, actually, if you boiled down the field last year. So if you ranked the entire field in terms of their world ranking at the start of the event, then six of the eventual top 12, six of the top 12 players came within the top eight of the actual final leaderboard. So if we went from top to bottom, the top eight of the leaderboard, six of those were within the top 12 ranked players within the field. So it's essentially the cream rose to the top this time last year. Four of them had top five finishes on Paspalum to their name. And a few of them had decent coastal records as well. Wood's got a decent, we know about Chris Wood from his exploits at the Open Championship. Joost Loughton's won the KLM. Alex Levy's got some decent coastal records as well, and they all finished in the top eight last year. So I think, there's a few things you can grab onto here this week. The way I started with this, when I first started looking at this back end of last week, there wasn't this wind coming in at the weekend. It looked like it was going to kind of be pretty consistent 10 mile an hour through the 4 days, and it's picked up. The forecast has changed since I first started looking. My knee-jerk reaction back then was Alex Levy, and I've stuck with that, because originally, the way I look at Levy, he's historically been this kind of flat track bully who's, when the conditions are soft and when the conditions are scoreable, he can go out and attack a course, and he absolutely thrives on that. He's won Paspalum greens. There's a lot to like. And then the wind came in, and it kind of made me sit back and think, well, actually, is this the right way to go? But I think there's actually a bit of maturity spreading into Levy's game. And I think he's recognised himself he can't just be this one-dimensional player who can only win on soft, attackable golf courses. And his win in Morocco last year, the Trophée Hassan d'Or, was a real breakthrough for him, I think. It was tough conditions. He won at 8 under par, which is nothing like the way that he normally plays. He normally wins at kind of 17, 19 under. That's exactly where his wheelhouse is. But 8 under par was a real step in the right direction. And I think he's developing that into his game. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him this week get into a really strong position after the first two rounds and then employ that kind of extra level of maturity and actually see the job through over the weekend in tougher conditions. Going back to some recent form, he was second for putting at the Saudi International, which we've talked about as being on the Paspalham greens. He's also got a win on the Paspalham back at the China Open 2014, I want to say, some of that kind of bracket. He was second for greens in regulation here last year, 81.9%. So even though a lot of these players were very, very similar in terms of the stats, he still stood out as handling the approach game better than almost everyone else here. When he's hitting greens, when he's putting well, he's a very, very good player. And he came here as favourite last year. He'd been playing some decent golf, and he was favourite to win the tournament, which is not a situation that he's used to.
All very comfortable with, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he still did well. He finished well inside the top 10, and I don't think you can knock that, really. Backing up Alex Levy. Alex Levy is Paul Dunne. Now, sounding a bit like a crap record, really, because I've backed Dunne a number of times over the last few weeks.
Well, he's delivering.
Yeah, he came close at the Super 6.
Deliver again.
Yeah, he came close at the Super 6. We talked about it last week. He can't knock it, really, because he delivered a top 50-1 each way return for the top 54 market, and he could easily have won that market for us.
Started to hit greens and fairways, though. That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, it is with Paul. You know, we know about his, we're talking about Lynxy style. We know about his Open Championship pedigree. He led the Open in 2015 as an amateur after 54 holes before eventually getting that nosebleed right at the end. But, showed a bit of promise there. Won the British Masters at Close House in 2017. I've told you a number of times, I still can't believe I didn't back him that week, because I've backed him a few times that season and finally given up hope with him, and then he goes and produces a fantastic 61 in the final round to take the title from Rory McIlroy, which is a great win for him. Seventh at the Dunhill Links that year, second to John Rahm at the Spanish Open, which was played again on a Lynxy style track last year.
It's open, there's a lot of mounds around that golf course.
Yeah, there is.
I mean, did have a links feel.
For me,
I remember.
Yeah, for me, Dunne's at his best when you've got this kind of a track where it encourages a recovery shot when you play, you play a poor drive and you need to find that recovery shot that's going to get you onto the green. And this is the kind of track that's going to encourage that completely. But as you just said, actually, his game is picking up in terms of his accuracy. He was 15th for driving accuracy at the Vic Open. He was 13th for greens and regulation at the Super 6 after 54 holes. In terms of putting, go back to Saudi, he was 4th for putts per round there on the Paspalham greens. And actually, if you watch some of the golf at the Super 6, the way that his short irons and his approach play, his wedge play was really on song on a lot of his approach shots. He looked really, really good, really, really confident. And he spent the last week in Dubai just spending some time with some family and acclimatising himself ready for this week. So none of this rushing about, none of this rushing home. He's just taking it easy in Dubai, and he's going to meander down to Oman for this week's event. And while he's playing well, and he is the kind of player who can hold his form when he's playing well, while he's playing well, I think he's well worth sticking with, personally. So Paul Dunne, 40-1 is available on Dunne right now. And a couple of longer prices to finish. Callum Shinquin, who's been playing some tidy golf. He's not got much of a status, Shinquin, because he finished outside the 110 last year. So he's been desperately trying to get into some of these events. He got through a qualifier to play in Dubai, the Desert Classic, and shot 66-68 to be fifth at halfway. So he nearly repaid that persistence He kind of drifted away after that, but clearly there's a bit of game there. Got a decent start at the Vic Open, 64 in round one, 66 in round three. He was second going into Sunday. And again, couldn't quite convert, but some positive signs.
He's a fast start, isn't he, Chinkwin? He might be worth a first round leader pump.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, we shall see the tee times later on today, and that could be another good shout for Chinkwin.
Yeah,
it's the kind of market where you can pick up some decent returns with him. I do agree on that.
75-1.
Yeah, third year in 2015 at the NBO Grand Final, where he led into the final day. Opened with a 67 and was sitting in fourth here last year. So there's lots to like. And again, if you look at his history, we'll all remember him mainly for losing that gilt-edged opportunity at the Scottish Open in 2017, where he bogeyed the last hole and let Rafa Cabrera-Bello into the playoff. And then Cabrera-Bello won that in the extra holes, which was a real body blow for him. But a bit further down the line, hopefully he's got his head all around that. And there's a bit more Scottish Open to France form as well, which encourages two. And my final pick was Mathieu Pavon, the Frenchman, Mathieu Pavon.
Well, yeah, I kept talking about Shinnecock Hills, and he actually got right into the mix at Shinnecock Hills last year, didn't he, old Mathieu?
He was a real surprise package that week, wasn't he? You know, he's not got a win on the tour yet. He's won a couple of times in the Alps Tour, but he hasn't broken through on the European Tour. But he talks about Shinnecock Hills. He was third at the Scottish Open in 2017 at Donald Links, second at the Mauritius Open back end of last year in December, sixth at Nordea Masters, which is played along that fjord in Sweden, 10th at the Irish Open in 2018 at Ballyliffin. So there's a lot of kind of tangible form there, I think, for these kind of coastal style tracks. He's played here a couple of times. He was third in the NBO Grand Final 1 year, 31st here last year, but he led at the halfway point after an opening 68 and 65. So he clearly got a liking for the track. And I remember from some of the interviews that he made at the time, he was talking about feeling comfortable and confident on the track because of how well he'd played in that NBO Grand Final. And clearly, that washed through to his first couple of rounds here last year. Not much since that second in Mauritius, but he did produce a 24th place finish in Dubai, where he's fifth at the halfway point. Missed the cut in Saudi, but shot 77 first round to take himself out of his 67 in the second to give himself a little bit of confidence heading into this week. And given it's a track that he likes, the early 100-1, I think he's been nibbled into 90s now, Tuesday morning. I thought that was, again, a price worth taking on with Pavon. Not to be confused with Pavan, who's also been heavily backed this week. So I've probably gone with the wrong one, but we shall see. But yeah, that's where I am. So
he's a GIR merchant, isn't he, Pavan?
Yes, yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah. I think you need a little bit more putting prowess about you this week to get over the line. But I'd have said the same thing with Loughton last year, and I'd have probably disregarded Loughton on the basis that I don't think he can get to, you know, a low enough putting total, and he produced it last year. So we shall see. I think you need to like a bit of Paspalum. I think you need to like a bit of coastal courses. I think a little bit of links form is a no bad thing whatsoever. Throw it all in the mix and see where it comes to. Anything that caught your eye, Steve?
I just thought David Lipsky, for a bloke that finished top 10 in a world championship at 40-1.
Yeah.
You could say, oh yeah, he won't travel well. But that's Lipsky's the sort that's, he's travelled the world for the last 7-8 years. He goes all over the place.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I like Lipsky.
The other thing with Lipsky is he was in the top 8 for greens in regulation last week.
Yeah, Lipsky plays well on Bermuda greens, and there's a lot of correlation between Bermuda and
Well,
Pasco
yeah,
and
I can see. Is he top three or four at the Dubai Desert Classic a couple of years ago?
Yeah,
I'm just having a flick through. Yeah, there's something in there.
Yeah, if I were to pigeonhole Lipsky, it'd be more on a more in a classical style track, probably tree lined, with Bermuda greens. And I think, that performance in Mexico in far loftier company is very, you know, it's very notable. You can't disregard that. He has got the travel back, but as you say, you know, compared to many of the players in this field, that form sticks out like a beacon. So I don't think I'd put anyone off.
I thought so. No, he's an interesting thought, Salt Lipsky. So, yeah, that's just the one that jumped out at me. But I've got to say, your top two, especially, I think, Alexander Livy, he's a class operator at European Tour level. And if he can come here being favourite and finish top five last year, and he's a little bit under the radar this year, I think that's a cracking shout. Mm.
Yeah.
And we all have a mutual love of Paul Dunn. So, yeah, I'm with you all on those two for sure.
Cool.
Lovely. Right. A packed old show. Probably a little bit too long, but we were wittering at the start. But, Paul, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Best of luck. And listeners, don't forget to pop along and get your entries in for the Majors Comp. And if you fancy joining our GBS League on DraftKings, then follow the links through and you can get into this week's tournaments.
Absolutely. Right. Thank you to the listeners. Again, leave us a review. We'll read them out next week and get involved. Right. Thanks a lot. See you again next week. Bye-bye.